If you would please find the book of Hosea. We're going to be looking at chapter 5.
May I say something 1 second?
Can we stop you?
If those of you have never gone to one of the services where the missionary can come back, it's been all these years, you need to go. Because they're not going to make you sign up to go to wherever, Bangladesh or something. But we can do stuff here in America. We don't have to give up everything and go out and do it, whatever. The audience, I think, a lot of them were afraid that maybe God was going to say, you need to go somewhere, because they were kind of subdued. The choir was wonderful, and the young man who's the new president of the international, whatever it is, was wonderful.
International Mission, Dr. David Platt.
So if you ever have a chance to go, you need to go, because the missionaries don't just talk ad lib. They stand up, if those of you have been, they stand up and they have a little video or a voice thing that tells what they've done. It was really neat.
I do have to tell you, if you weren't there, you won't understand all the implications of this, but the choir had some really interesting feedback as part of what we did.
Truly some feedback.
Yeah, it was quite a bit of feedback.
Yes.
Yeah. So
there was no, I didn't even know anything about it. There was no publicity about it.
We will let you know next time.
There really wasn't any publicity about it at the board.
Yeah, they keep that pretty low key.
Yeah, I think the attendees.
The place was full anyway. Let me invite you to remember where we were last week. Chapter 4 presented what? This is a pop quiz. Indictment of the spiritual leaders for their failure to action. We're looking now at chapter 5. What's going to happen in chapter 5? I'm only asking this because at the end of class last time I told you what we were going to do in chapter 5.
Judgment against
the country's sake. Chapter 4 is an indictment of the spiritual leadership and the failures that it has to do what it should have been doing. What's chapter 5? The indictment of the political, the civil leadership. You need to see that as you're going. Let me show you how you can see this. Chapter 5, verse 1. How does it start? Hear this, you priests. This is a pronoun which is at that spot, not defined. So what does the this reply apply to? Chapter 4. This is a transition sentence. Hear this, O priests. That's look back to chapter 4. Then it says, listen, house of Israel, and be careful. That does not mean the people. What does it mean?
The leader.
Royal house.
Because I think it even says that in the next little bit, just in case you missed it. Right? If one was well versed in British history, one might know of the Stuarts and the Tudors. These are the royal families. In my translation, they're using the word house instead of royal family. The royal house instead of the royal family. Hear this, you priests. That looks backwards. Listen, pay attention, royal house. For it is you who have justice in your kingdom. Chapter 4 focused on religious leaders, spiritual leaders. Chapter 5 turns to political leaders. They have justice in their care. You want to take a guess how well they've been doing with that? Not too well. They were supposed to have set a moral climate for good. And I have said that with those words specifically. Listen again. They were supposed to have set a moral climate for good. What have they done instead? Would you keep reading? It is you who have justice in your care, comma, but what does it say? You have been or set a snare at Mizpah. You have outspread a net on Tabor. You have dug a deep ditch at Shittim, and so I'm going to punish you all. You're supposed to have set a climate for moral good, and instead you have set a snare, you've got a net, and you've got a deep ditch. What's the purpose of a deep ditch?
Throw things in it that you were trying to get rid of.
Not necessarily. I'm talking hunting here. What's the deep ditch? You chase the animals toward this place. They think they've got a place of safety to run, and suddenly they fall into a ditch and break their net. Okay? What's the purpose of the snare? Capture animals. You put it out, they usually put it along a game trail. What about the net? I need to tell you about spiders. May I tell you about spiders? There was a guy in the biology faculty at Hampton, Sydney, who came to the university years ago. He is an expert on spiders. What he's doing at Hampton, Sydney, and not Richmond, I'll never understand. But he was at Hampton, Sydney. He studied spiders. And he showed us the webs that spiders prepare to catch the flies and the bugs and the other kinds of things. Orb weavers was one type spider, because they start and they build this spiral that goes out like this, and it comes out looking round and all this. He showed pictures of what happens when you feed the spiders significant amounts of caffeine, and what happens to their webs as they get higher levels of this. It's a great thing. And he told us about my favorite spider, the bonsai spider. Now that was his name for them. That they had a genus and a whatever listing of their name. But he called them the bonsai spiders because he says they were the most evolved spiders that there were. How many legs do spiders have?
Eight.
Bravo. The bonsai spider would climb up a tree limb, and it would then spin a web between four of its legs. It would be walking with four legs, and it would have this web between its other four legs. This is truth. I am telling you here about the bonsai spider. It would see a bug down on the ground, and it would jump from the limb, pull in the four legs that it had been walking with, and, want to guess? Stretch the legs that had the web, and he thought, cry bonsai, as it landed with the net on the bug. Most amazing thing I've ever heard of, right? What's the middle of these three? You've set a snare, you've outspread a net, you've dug a deep ditch, and what's happened? The people have fallen. They've fallen into the ditch, they've been captured by the net, they've been held by the snare. What were they supposed to do? You had justice in your care. You were supposed to set a moral climate for good. And instead, you set a snare. You spread out a net, and you dug a deep ditch.
I don't have justice in my first one.
So
I have judgment.
Okay.
For the judgment applies to you.
Is that at the end of verse 2 or is that the middle of verse 1?
That's the middle of verse 1.
Okay, then I like this translation better than that one. Next week I may like your translation on some other place, but I like this one better. You have justice in your care. I think that captures it better. I think judgment applies to you. The word applies doesn't seem to be as well chosen. If they said judgment was in your responsibility or judgment was the
against you.
Yeah. If it says that, I think it's sort of picking up what's at the end of verse 2. Now, I want you to go back and take one more look. How does this verse start? It starts here. Listen. Pay attention. Did you catch that? Now, admittedly, the first one, I think, points backwards and the other two point forwards. But here, listen, pay attention.
So it's said three times.
Yeah.
So it's got to be important.
That's what I think. Now, I got to switch translations for verse 3. Because New Living Translation, I think, captures this one the best. Let me stop because he wants to ask me a question about verse 2. You may not have heard
this. Says the revolters are deeply involved in slaughter. I don't know where the ditch came from.
I think if you have the word slaughter somewhere in there, that's a pretty good fit for what I was saying. Different. One of the things I'm trying to help you train yourselves on is recognizing the value of having more than one translation in front of you. I have two copies of the Bible, one of them hardback, one of them softback, that have four columns, two on the left side, two on the right side. And I've got four different translations across there. I've got King James, New Living, New International, and The Message. That's a pretty good book. What's the problem with it?
Big.
Print's too small. Other than that, it's really great. If the print were big enough, then it'd be this thick, and it'd be hard to carry around. But I think if you've got the word slaughter in yours, it's picking up on the same idea. But this translation, I think, captures that a little better. Judgment has been handed down against you, is the way New Living words verse 1. I don't think that captures it as much as you have justice in your care. They have two very different meanings. I admit that, and I'm making sure you hear that. But of those two meanings, in the context of this, I'm hearing you had justice in your care, but instead you did this. That word "but," I think, is capturing something that rings true. Take your choice how you read this. It's still an indictment. Verse 3, I know what you're like, O Ephraim. Mine says Ephraim at that spot. Mm-hmm. What does that word mean? Just checking to make sure that you're clued in on the clues. It is a big part of Israel. It's the section of Israel north of Judah. And so this would be the territory. I think that's the territory that would include Samaria, the capital city. So when he says Ephraim, if you want to substitute in your mind, he's talking about Israel, but he's talking about a major leadership part of that. There's a sense of the poet in some of what is said. I know what you're like, Ephraim. You cannot hide yourself from me, O Israel. And then here is the way New Living words the next little part. You read the next little part. I'll give you just a second to do that. And then let me read it in my translation. I know what you're like, O Ephraim. You cannot hide yourself from me, O Israel. You have left me as a prostitute leaves her husband. Considering the book we're in, the power of that way of wording that comes through. Because that's what happened to Hosea. You are utterly defiled. Your deeds will not let you return to your God. You're a prostitute through and through, and you do not know the Lord. Verse 5, the arrogance of Israel testifies against her. Your deeds won't let you return to the Lord. The arrogance of Israel testifies against her. Israel and Ephraim will stumble under their load of guilt. Judah will fall with them. They'll come with their flocks and herds to offer sacrifices to the Lord, but they will not find him, because he has withdrawn from them. What did we say last week? Remember what we talked about in this context last week? Oh, how brief the knowledge base is. The glory of God departed. Anybody look up the word Ichabod to check to see if it meant what it said? They have betrayed, verse 7. Here it comes again. New Living Translation is capturing something that not all the translations do. They have betrayed the honor of the Lord, bearing children that are not his. You hear that? I don't know what your translation has at that spot. It's probably not quite the same.
Strange children.
Strange children, yeah. I don't think illegitimate would come closer. But think about Hosea's experience and how God led him to begin to write these things down and to communicate them. And think about the power of those two verses. Verse 7 and back at verse 3. Look at verse 8. Sound the alarm. Where?
Gibeah.
Blow the trumpet. Where? In Ramah or Ramah. Raise the battle cry. Where? In Beth Avon. Now, if you've read the Bible a bit, you've heard of Ramah or Ramah. You've heard of Gibeah. But you haven't heard of Beth Avon. You haven't heard of Beth Avon. There's a reason you haven't heard of Beth Avon. There's a reason you haven't heard of Beth Avon. Because the place name that he's referring to is Bethel. What does Bethel mean? I'm hoping all of you know this. House of God. Which part means house?
Beth.
Bravo. Which part means God? El. So this says Beth Avon. Luckily, I have a footnote. And the footnote says, what's the house of wickedness. He's not even going to use the word Bethel. He's going to call it what it is, house of wickedness. That's where the golden calf was set up, and that'll be referred to later. Did you notice anything three times just now? Sound the alarm, blow the trumpet, raise the battle cry. Anytime that you hear that, you said it was an ant. This thing's flying up here.
I think
it's a fruit fly. I think there's fruit somewhere here.
Watch out,
You do know that old statement, don't you? Time flies like an arrow. Fruit flies like a banana. You have to think a while to get that one. Okay. Let me back up because there's something hiding in here that I don't want to skip. The power of that phrase, you have justice in your care, but you've set a snare, you've set outstretched a net, you've dug a ditch, a deep ditch. You're supposed to be setting a climate for moral good. And instead, you've inverted that. And you've set all the things in place that lead a nation to destruction. Okay. Their society, I think, might have been simple compared to ours. Do you agree? I think so. They certainly don't have the technology that we do. They don't have the instant communication. They don't have the transportation systems we do.
I've got five translations here, and they all say judgment is against you.
Well, then you need to add New Living to that list and see what you can do. I'm sorry, you need to add this one to that list, New Jerusalem. See if you can do that. Okay. How is a political system supposed to function?
Aren't they supposed to set examples?
Well, there's the most fascinating thing in the news in the last week. A proposal has been made that would apply new regulations onto financial advisors. Do you know what that regulation is? If this goes through, they will be required to put the interest of their clients first in any advice that they give them. What does that tell you is the case now? I am told there is a small class, there's one group that has that requirement now. It's called a fiduciary requirement to put the interest of your clients first in all advice you give them. But the large majority are not bound by this.
Really?
And there's regulations coming down, and those regulations are being fought by some very interesting groups. Some very interested groups. Now, I'm only calling your attention to this to say, how should a political system work? The people in charge should do what? Put the best interest of the people they represent as number one. I need my sign. We are in a position where special interest groups can twist and pervert. And it happens on both sides. It happens on both sides. An agenda is pushed as opposed to an agenda that would be the best for the people. The debate on what's best for the people seems to be lost in something. I don't know how far an indictment to go, but it does seem like a fiduciary requirement on behalf of the representatives might be an interesting thing to watch. In essence, Governor McDonald was sent to jail for violating that idea. But it doesn't take too hard a looking to find out, at best, he was a talented amateur. The pros are still out there.
He was a Republican. There's an article about those fiduciary things from Morning Business.
It's getting some print. If you take the other reading of that line, the one that Rita is pushing, if you take the other reading for that, right, you will be judged by this. What will the leaders be judged by? These are the political leaders. These are the civil leaders. What will they be judged by? They'll be judged based on what they do. Do I use my influence to solve problems and to make things better for the people that I serve? Or do I add to the problems? Now, we quit a moment ago, I think, at verse 8. Sound the alarm, blow the trumpet, raise the war cry, raise the battle cry. Let me see if I can get out of this. Yeah, there we go. Verse 9, there's two or three translations that are different again here. I'm going to read this one out of New Living. One thing is certain, Israel, on your day of punishment, you will become a heap of rubble. In this translation, it says Ephraim will be a wasteland. Does yours have something like that?
Desolation.
The leaders of Judah, New Living has a poor translation at this spot. The leaders of Judah have become like thieves. If yours uses a literal translation, it will say something very specific here. What does yours say? Yeah, that's the one. They move the boundary stones. Do we have boundary stones today?
Yes.
The answer is some, but mostly what do we have? Mostly what do we have? If they survey the lot on which my house sits, what do they look for?
Pins.
They call them pins, but they're somewhat bigger than that.
There's a rod.
You call it a stake, except stakes are usually wood, and they're used for things that... Anyway, they're rods, and they're located at certain points, right? Okay, so what happens if somebody moves one of those?
You can't, or they're too far to
grab. If enough is on the stake, somebody, that's the point that they're making. My translation says thieves, because that's what it amounts to. Mm-hmm. But the way they thieve, they move the boundary stones. The markers that are supposed to define whose property is who, they start moving that around. I find it amazing that people can say, I left office poor as a church mouse, and now I've got hundreds of millions of dollars. There's something interesting about that. There's something interesting about that. And I'm looking at both sides of the political spectrum. I'm not looking at one, because this is happening all kinds of places. Yes, ma'am.
Instead of saying thieves, I have leaders of Judah have changed the markers.
Yeah, this is going back and forth between Israel and Judah, and moving the markers is the literal translation there. So, verse 10 says, I will pour out my anger on them like a waterfall. We're going to take a pause. Yes, sir.
Would it be fair to extract this verse and relate it to more of a political boundary?
Oh, how interesting. How interesting. Would it be fair to apply this to gerrymandering?
Yes.
The defining of political boundaries. I think as long as you don't limit it to that,
right,
that would be one of the things that you could certainly, I think, apply that to.
Mm-hmm.
And that has become an interesting thing in the world that we live in, too. The leaders of Judah, verse 10 talks about. What does verse 11 talk about? The leaders of Judah. That's what verse 10 talks about. What does verse 11 talk
about?
Mine says the people of Israel. Yours just says Ephraim, right?
Yes.
Okay. If you can hear the contrast, the leaders here, the people there. I think that comes a little closer. The people of Israel will be crushed and broken by my judgment. Another translation simply says crushed by the sentence. And if you don't understand that, that's a consequence of a legal precision process. Why is that happening? I'm still in verse 11. Why is this happening? The people are going to be crushed and broken by the judgment that I bring. Why?
Went after filth.
Yours says they went after filth.
They went after followed man's commands.
Intent on pursuing idols. Mine says deliberately followed a lie, and the word lie is capitalized. This translation says because they are determined to worship idols. Can you put that into context? What is an idol? And do not limit it to something made out of stone or wood that has a little face carved on it.
Something you put before God.
Something that you put in place of God that captures you. Do you see how that word fiduciary comes back in a very different context? What do I place first in my life? God says, you place me first and everything else falls in place behind that. You put something else in place of God, everything's going to be out of line.
I've often heard the definition of an idol can be something good that once it's worshipped becomes something bad. Right?
I think that's one of the ways to do that, yeah. I want you to take a look at verse 12.
Interesting.
Mine uses the word destroy in the first half of the verse.
Like a moth. That's like a moth.
Mine says moth in the first half and dry rot in the second half. Does that match up? Does that match up? Okay. This translation says ringworm and gangrene. I like having different translations. I encourage you to try this. It's interesting. Now, let me ask you, how does gangrene work? It works in silence. It works from within. And its effects are not noticed until it's too late to do much about it. I watch a television show. I'm not proud of watching it, but I do enjoy watching it. And I saw an episode this week where basically the back deck has dry rot. And the lead character is standing there, leans up against the deck. Somebody else is trying to tell him something. He's brushing them off. No, let me speak first. And about that time, he falls through the railing. It all collapses underneath him, and he's out of sight. And the other one walks over and says, "That's what I was trying to tell you." There's a problem with the deck. Okay? Ringworm. I don't even know how to work with that. I'm going to work with gangrene. Right? Dry rot. It can be there, and you don't notice it until pressure comes of some kind. Are we okay so far? Don, you remember that moment in the bathroom when we... Remember that? Right? Couldn't tell it was there until we... Old story, ask him afterwards.
What I'm thinking gangrene is because the blood supply is cut off. Something has been cut off from these people spiritually that causes it.
Yeah, and I don't know how to fit all of that in. Dry rot is the absence of protection. gangrene, it's because something has gotten sick and hasn't been addressed. There's lots of ways to do it, but I want you to see, it's slow, it's insidious, and it's not noticed for a long time, but the damage is being done. You okay? All right.
But I think the combination of the ringworm and the gangrene is the ringworm is from the outside in, and the gangrene is from the inside out.
Good, good, thank you. I hadn't seen that, but that's... But both are slow and not noticed at first until the damage is so bad, right?
Right.
Can you feel yourselves being set up for something?
Yeah.
Can you feel that?
Yeah.
Good, because that's what's happening. All right? Verse 13.
Yes,
when Israel and Judah saw how sick they were. Now, listen. When Israel and Judah saw how sick they were, mine says Israel did something. Don't miss this. This is the first part. When Israel and Judah saw how sick they were, Israel did something. Do you notice that? Don't worry about what they did yet. Just look. Israel moves and Judah doesn't. At least that's the implication. Does that match with what you have?
Yeah. Now, that's just poor translation because it only talks about Ephraim, which we've now said is going to be the people. And it doesn't talk about a contrast between...
Once Ephraim realized he was sick and Judah that he had an ulcer.
Okay, Judah,
do you see that?
Yes.
Did yours have that?
His wound, yes.
Ephraim then went to Assyria.
Yes.
Right? All I'm saying is the Bible reports... Two groups realized they were sick. One of them took an action. What was the action that one took?
Went to Assyria.
Except for the great king.
For help. And the great king replied back. You have to sort of put quote marks around this in my translation. What did he say? I can't help you. I can't help you and I can't cure you. Who did they go to? Went to Assyria. What's coming for Israel, the northern kingdom, in just a few years? They're going to be destroyed by Assyria. They turn to Assyria for help. And Assyria says, I can't help you. Verse 14, what does it say? Verse 12, I'm going to be like a moth consuming wool. I'm going to be like dry rot making wood rotten. Or ringworm and gangrene if you want to pick the other translations, right? But you come to verse 14, God says, I'm going to be something else. What?
Lion.
I'm going to come at you like a lion. That's a different kind of destruction, but the destruction that it brings is all the same. What's happening? God allows spiritual sickness to work. At first, slowly. And with little sensation, one of the things that happens is you don't feel gangrene. It comes, I'm told anyway, that it comes in later. Everything just goes numb. And then, at the end, a devouring lion comes in. And verse 15, God removes his presence from the people. Can you see the sequence? If I am bent on spiritual sickness, God's going to allow it. And it's going to happen first, quietly, insidiously, almost without notice. And it's going to, I like the ringworm and gangrene that Allison said, comes in slowly from the outside, comes in slowly from the inside. But quiet. Then, you start looking for help in all the wrong places. And then, spiritual sickness comes back in its effects like a lion. I will tear them to pieces and carry them off, and no one will be left to rescue them. Then they will return to my place until they admit their guilt and turn to me. For as soon as trouble comes, they will earnestly search for me. I'm not sure that last sentence expresses what is going to happen as much as it expresses what God hopes will happen. Or what traditionally happens. Go back to the book of Judges and you see this pattern over and over again. People get in trouble, they turn to the Lord. For one generation or two, God brings up a leader, they follow that leader, they turn to the Lord. Two generations later, all that's gone and they're back in trouble again. And that cycle just repeats and repeats. God withdraws and waits for the people to recognize their need for God, which comes in the form of guilt. and turn and seek him. What does guilt normally cause people to do? I hope you know this. What does guilt normally cause people to do? Run from God. What is God hoping for? What is God praying for? What is God looking for? For people to realize in their guilt, God's the only hope they have and turn to him. Okay? Now, I wish we could talk about the first verse of chapter 6, but we can't do it. Why not? Because we have people who are going to get up and leave in about 30 seconds if we don't quit first. So we're going to stop here. What's your assignment for next week? Hosea 6. What's the subject matter of Hosea 6? Well, that's part of your assignment, is to find out. Let's have a word of prayer as we go. Our Father, we're in a hard place with tough, tough images. And yet when we look closely, we can see some of these things happening in the society we live in. In fact, if we look closely, we can see a lot of these things happening in the society we live in. Give us a sense of your presence. Give us clarity in understanding your leadership. Help us to know when to speak and what to say, when to listen and when to act. Help us evaluate people based on where they're leading us. Help us stand with people who have found a way to promote moral courage and moral good. There don't seem to be that many of them anymore. Maybe there never were. But there are always some. Help us be the kind of people that speak your truth, even if it's a little hard to do that. And help us find and work with others who sense your presence. May our community be a strengthening of the presence of your Spirit so that others can see and come to you. For we ask this in Jesus' name. Amen.